We've talked over the years a lot about addiction and substance abuse here on the show. Our next guest says we can learn a lot from addiction treatment about a related problem in our lives, compulsive overconsumption. That could be anything from compulsive shopping, a computer game habit, constantly checking our social media and our phones. What ties all those together? The system of pain and pleasure in our brains and dopamine in particular. We're taking a look now at dopamine and its role in a wide variety of problems, from substance abuse disorders to compulsively checking our phones. In her new book, our next guest says that modern excess has made us all the more vulnerable to addiction and to compulsive behaviors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have one of these, or have you had one of these experiences, a compulsive behavior? Binge watching shows past the point where it feels healthy, constantly checking social media, eating, you name it. How do they make you feel? Did you find a way to cut down on them? Do you have questions about how all this works in our lives and in our brains? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Anna Lemke is professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford University, chief of the Stanford Addiction Medicine Dual Diagnosis Clinic. She's the author of Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. That's just out in paperback. Dr. Lemke, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We, as I mentioned, we talk a lot about addiction and substance abuse disorder. I'd like, if you would, for you to introduce this concept of compulsive overconsumption. It's got overlap with what we think of as addiction, but it might involve a lot of activities that we might not think of as addictive. What do we mean by that?
Well, addiction is a spectrum disorder, and it is possible to be a little bit addicted, which means that we engage in behaviors in a compulsive, out of control way that is ultimately not in line with our goals and values, and may even be harming us and other people. And this can apply not just to things that we put in our bodies, including food, but can also apply to behaviors, things like gambling, shopping, pornography, masturbation, video games, social media, cryptocurrency, online chess, you name it. I have probably heard of pretty much every compulsive overconsumption slash addiction type behavior you could imagine. Why? Because we all have the same ancient machinery that has us reflexively approaching pleasure and avoiding pain. It's called the pleasure-pain balance, or at least that's what I call it. And it's wonderfully adapted to a world of scarcity, but not so much for a world of overwhelming overabundance, which is the world we live in now.
Let's open up the hood on that machinery and one of the key ingredients in the title of your book, dopamine. What is it? Why is it such a big part of this story?
Dopamine is a neurotransmitter. It's a chemical that we make in our brain. It's fundamental to the experience of pleasure, reward, and motivation. It's also important for movement. That's no coincidence. Most organisms have to move to get the reward they want. But humans have been able to engineer our ecosystem so that we can just sit on the couch, swipe right and swipe left, and get our heart's desire. And this is very problematic for the brain, because what happens is that now we're releasing huge amounts of dopamine in the reward pathway very quickly. And that is not what our brains evolve for. And the result is that we're all becoming vulnerable to the problem of addiction, because what our brains do in the presence of these sudden intense spikes of dopamine is that our brains adapt by, in fact, downregulating our own dopamine production and transmission, not just to baseline tonic levels of dopamine firing, but actually below baseline to a dopamine deficit state. That's the come down, the hangover, the after effect. And with repeated exposure to high amounts of dopamine, a fire hose of dopamine, if you will, what essentially happens is we end up in a chronic or long-term dopamine deficit state, which is akin to a clinical depression. And I think that is the reason, or at least part of the reason, why we're seeing increasing rates of anxiety, depression, and suicide all over the world, but especially in rich nations. Of course, trauma, socioeconomic disparity, and many other stressors play a role, but I contend that it is the stress of overwhelming overabundance and the drugification of modern life that is, in fact, driving our brains to be in a physiologic dopamine deficit state, which feels exactly like depression.
I want to hammer that home a little bit. Let's say I like something like I do computer games. I mostly play them in a healthy way. At points in my life, I've definitely played them too much. That first bit of playing feels nice. I probably get a little bit of that dopamine. But if I keep doing it again and again and again, I can speak from experience. It gets less fun over time. I feel worse about it. That same amount of time spent playing isn't as fun. That's what's going on with that dopamine cycle, in effect.
Exactly. So exposure to highly reinforcing drugs and behaviors over time will in fact change our brain and reset our hedonic or joy set point, such that our pleasure-pain balance becomes chronically tilted to the side of pain. And now we need more and more pleasure, not to feel good, but just to feel normal. And when we're not engaging in our intoxicant, we are in a depressed state, a dopamine deficit state, experiencing the universal symptoms of withdrawal from any addictive substance, which are anxiety, irritability, insomnia, dysphoria, and craving.
Talking to Dr. Anna Lemke, author of the book Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. Dr. Lemke is an expert on addiction, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Are you willing to share your experience with this kind of compulsive habit, behavior, whatever you want to call it? Is that something you have now, maybe with social media, shopping, a substance? The list goes on and on. Did you find a way to break out of it? Love to hear it. If you did, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Lemke, it seems like a challenge here when we're talking about something that, you know, isn't a known dangerous drug, a heroin or something like that. How do we know when we've crossed the line from, hey, this is a thing I like to do and have fun doing, to this is a compulsive overconsumption of this thing?
You need to look for the three C's: control, compulsion, and consequences. So out of control use means using more than we planned or intended to, or more than is consistent with our goals and values, including opportunity costs. So what are the things we're not doing because we're spending so much time doing a particular behavior or a particular drug? Compulsion refers to a lot of our mental real estate now being occupied by thinking about our drug to the exclusion of other things, as well as a level of automaticity around initiating our drug use. And again, I use the term drug very broadly to incorporate behaviors as well. And then most importantly, we want to look for consequences. These can be relationship consequences, work consequences, health consequences, especially continued consequences, use despite consequences. So those are the signs that we look for as people are tipping from recreational or even self-medication kind of use into overuse, compulsive use, and addictive use. Other soft signs to look for are when we start to lead the double life or lie about our consumption to other people. This is very classically happens as people become addicted. They tend to sort of lead, again, this double life where they're not even being honest with themselves about what they're using and how they're spending their time. The other soft sign to look for is to think about and be very mindful of not just how we feel when we're doing our drug, but how we feel afterward. So to take your example of the video games, you can certainly remember the kind of pleasure you initially felt when you were playing video games, but now think about how you felt as you were trying to stop or right after you stopped. That brings into awareness this kind of dopamine free fall that happens when we stop using a highly intoxicating substance or drug.
We're talking to Dr. Anna Lemke about her book, Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. It is out this month in paperback, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are these experiences, are these ideas sounding familiar to you, something you're dealing with now or went through earlier in your life? How did you get through it? Did you find ways to change habits, separate yourself from whatever it is that might have triggered this compulsive overconsumption of, you fill in the blank of what? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Dr. Anna Lemke, author of Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your experiences, your questions. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller. Gary is with us in southern Wisconsin. Gary, hello.
Hi there. I have come in an unusual story. I had a tremendous amount of tragedy when I was younger, about 21 years old. My sister was killed in a car accident. I was in the car accident, didn't walk for 2 years, had 14 surgeries. My dad later, a year after that, committed suicide. I was so depressed, I went to a doctor. They misdiagnosed me as schizophrenic and put me on Stelazine. Now, anybody that researches Stelazine knows that it down-regulates dopamine dramatically. And since that period, I've always had trouble with depression. So after many, many years, I've now had over 20 surgeries, and, you know, I try to do what I can to lift my mood, but because of that Stelazine damage to my brain, I always have trouble. I take like L-tyrosine, L-phenylalanine, that type of thing, but I still have PTSD and tremendous pain all the time.
Gary, I'm so sorry you went through all of that, and best to you. Dr. Lemke, obviously we can't diagnose Gary here, but that idea of medications that suppress dopamine, it seems like that would be something we'd want to be really careful with.
Well, it's an interesting call. And yeah, Gary, gosh, I would think what jumps out at me is your incredible resilience at enduring so much life tragedy and coming through the other side. You know, Stelazine is a dopamine receptor antagonist. It's used to treat psychotic disorders like schizophrenia. I'm not aware of any research showing that it leaves a long-lasting dopamine deficit state. You know, it's possible, I suppose, but really typically once people stop taking a medication like Stelazine, it will no longer be blocking those dopamine receptors and shouldn't really leave any long-term residual damage. So, you know, it's hard to know, Gary, whether it's the medicine or whether it's your life tragedies that set you up for depression or whether, you know, there are all the surgeries. I mean, there are so many reasons why, you know, your life has been harder. But it's an interesting point and it's an interesting question, the ways that chemicals that limit dopamine might have some long-lasting effect. Although, again, I'm not aware of any research showing that.
Gary, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Martin joins us now in Duluth. Martin, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Martin?
Well, the question of rewarding yourself for breaking a bad habit and whether there's what kind of merit or not merit there is to that. Years ago, when I quit smoking cigarettes, I rewarded myself with buying a lot of expensive camping gear. And I'm assuming that's probably not a bad idea. I just want to hear her comments.
Interesting, Martin. That idea, Dr. Lemke, of replacing that habit we don't want, that addiction, with something better. What do you think?
Right. So there have been a lot of popular books written about doing just what you did, Martin, when trying to give up a bad habit, replace the one reward with another reward, as you did with the buying camping gear. The problem with that is twofold. First of all, there's the risk of cross addiction, where you could get addicted potentially to shopping. It sounds like you didn't, or at least you didn't elaborate on that. So that's good news. But the other problem with replacing one reward with another is that we're merely just continuing to prime our dopamine reward pathway. Whereas the intervention that I recommend in the book is to actually simply abstain from the highly reinforcing drug or behavior for long enough to reset reward pathways and let dopamine firing come back up to normal baseline levels. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done. That is the recommendation that I have, as opposed to this idea of replacing rewards, which doesn't quite reset reward pathways and may lead to a new addiction.
Thanks for calling in, Martin, at 800-642-1234. Dr. Lemke, I want to stay with strategies to help get out of these addictions. You talk about this idea in the book of self-binding, not just counting on willpower, which I know wouldn't work for me, but framing our lives, separating ourselves from the temptation. What kind of things are you talking about?
So this is using literal and metacognitive barriers between ourselves and our drug of choice so that we can press the pause button between desire and consumption. So for example, with a video game addiction, this would mean eliminating all of the video games from our various devices. Maybe if we have some kind of game console, putting that away for the 4-week period of the dopamine fast, long enough to reset reward pathways so that we can really then engage our willpower more successfully and not exhaustively. With a food addiction, this would involve getting that food of choice out of the house and only keeping the kind of healthier foods that we're wanting to eat. With a more typical cannabis or alcohol or other drug use disorder, this would mean, getting that drug out of the house, and also generally avoiding people, places, and things that might trigger us to use our drug. What's really interesting about triggers is that they also release dopamine, and we get a little bit high just thinking about or being reminded of our drug of choice, followed by a little mini dopamine deficit state, which is the state of craving, which then motivates us to use. So part of overcoming any kind of addiction means not just insulating ourselves from the actual drug, but also insulating ourselves to the extent possible from reminders or triggers of the drug.
We are talking to Dr. Anna Lemke, addiction expert, author of the book Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. We heard on Twitter from Leah, who writes, "Tanning was my addiction through high school and college, using tanning beds." Leah says, "I love the quick dopamine and results it would provide. I've since stopped tanning and have accepted my natural skin tone, and I'm healthier for it," she writes. That idea of accepting life without whatever addiction is, Dr. Lemkin, can you talk about that?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks, Leah. I love that you brought this up because it really does speak to the ways in which we can get addicted to many different types of reinforcers. And in the case of tanning beds, it's not just the look that probably was reinforcing or potentially addictive, but probably it was the physiologic response you got from the tanning itself. So the chemical boost, the little dopamine hit you got from the tanning. So I think, a big part of recovery from any addiction or compulsive overconsumption is readjusting ourselves to a life that's not full of these highs and lows, but somewhere in between. A patient of mine who had a very severe opioid addiction and who got into recovery and was grateful for his recovery, but missed some of the drama and excitement of his addicted life, actually turned toward tabletop games where he could assume certain characters and engage in excitement through the drama of the tabletop game rather than in his real life, which was more drama than he needed or wanted. Sometimes we encourage patients to do sort of secretly radical things to allow them to adjust to the sometimes boring, nature of everyday life. And this can be things like just wearing really exciting underwear or something like that.
Time for one more caller. Laura is with us in McHenry, Illinois. Laura, hi.
Yes, hi. I was calling to find out if this dopamine situation might have any relationship to a person who is a hoarder, where in that in the acquisition of the items that they tend to hoard, that there's the satisfaction, there's, a high that they kind of get out of it.
Laura, thanks for the call. We don't have a lot of time left, but Dr. Lemke, I'm guessing the answer is yes, dopamine could be part of that acquiring and keeping stuff, hoarding?
Oh, most certainly. So that cycle of acquisition and the anticipation and pleasure we get from collecting things and keeping things definitely involves dopamine. In the book, I talk about a patient who got addicted to buying things on Amazon, went into thousands of dollars in debt, had rooms full of keychains, sunglasses, and mugs he didn't need. And for him, it was really the process of acquisition, choosing the item, waiting for it to come. The moment he opened it and got it, he went into a severe dopamine deficit state withdrawal and then was back on the computer again looking for the next thing.
Thanks for that call, Laura. In our last minute or so, Dr. Lemke, part of the point in your book is it's really easy for us to find the things that make us feel good and then they stop making us feel good. You suggest we lean into the rest of life, the parts that don't always feel so good. How can we do that?
Well, what we've found is that by pressing on the pain side of the balance, which is to say doing things intentionally that are difficult, like exercise, ice cold water plunges, or anything that requires iterative endurance, attention, and effort, is a way to get dopamine indirectly. Because what we're doing when we expose ourselves to mild to moderate, noxious, or toxic stimuli, which actually exercise is, for example, is that we're telling our bodies, oh, there's an injury here. It's time to upregulate or make more of the feel-good neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, and norepinephrine. So it turns out that intentionally inviting hard things into your life is a great way to get dopamine without going into a dopamine deficit state. Obviously, you don't want to overdo it. Mm-hmm. It is possible to get addicted to pain, but in general, this is a very good strategy.
Dr. Lemke, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and thanks to the callers.
That's Dr. Anna Lemke, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford University. She talked to us about her book, Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. It came out in paperback this month.